The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, your NPR station for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, October 6, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later on today's show, Shi Hong-young will explain how he conducts a live orchestra as it plays the accompanying soundtrack to a film. Tomorrow night, he'll conduct members of the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas as an audience watches Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone at the Walmart app. First, it's Friday, so time to check in with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics. Michael joins us from his office in Fort Smith, and a pleasant Friday to you, sir.
Well, good Friday to you. It is a good Friday.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that took place this week, and let's talk about update a story that we've been following for some time, dealing with the police department at Fort Smith. There's been an audit, and what does it tell us?
Well, it teases us, really, and prefaces by saying the Talk Business has FOI'd the full draft, but Tracy Shockley, the internal auditor for the city of Fort Smith, was asked by Chief Nathaniel Clark, who took office on January 9th, to come in and conduct an audit, which is not unusual. So she did. And one of the things she found is problems in the what are called evidence rooms, which if anyone's ever watched cop shows on TV, they're familiar with an evidence room. It's in the department's criminal investigations division. And essentially, you know, we don't know the details, but the top line is that there is either money or equipment or both missing. So their buy sheets, which is the term that if I come to the supervisor and I want to use the evidence room money, you know, money we've confiscated that belongs to the police department to buy something, they'll report it. And, you know, the records are supposed to show that transaction. Well, those things don't match up. And, you know, so we don't know if that's $10 or $1,000. Or what the value is. We did have a source speak to us after this meeting and use the term actionable items, that there are actual items that could be, persons could face criminal or civil action. So again, we've FOI'd this document. I think the city thought that their investigation, investigation is private, but when you issue a report, I guess they thought that can be private, but it's not. It's public record, so we've asked for it, and hopefully we'll get it sometime today. Kyle, just another issue with the police department. We've had Chief Clark come in, the first African-American police chief, and that has not set well with some folks. He asked, you know, to be able to hire some of his own folks. That didn't go well, created a conflict with the Civil Service Commission. And then that's resulted in this apparent attempt to recall some of the city directors. And that recall effort is led by the union, the association that represents police and fire in the city. So not a good sign. I'm sure that more is going to come out here in the near future. But the audit, I should say the audit also covers 2015 through year to date, whenever Ms. Shockley cut that off. But it's probably relatively current.
Well, and this is just one more example. A city that has struggled over the last couple of years to keep the confidence of its population, this doesn't help make that a positive turn now.
No, it doesn't. You know, and they're in the middle of trying to diversify the force. It's still pretty much a white male police force. Does not all reflect, the demographics of the city. They're still struggling to do that.
Well, let's move from the police to parrots. Parrot Island Water Park is in Fort Smith, and operators would like it to become a bigger part of Fort Smith, wouldn't they?
Yes, they've asked for, they want to add two slides. Apparently the slides are the more popular part of the park. They want to add two of those at a cost of around $1.5 million. That request was made to the Fort Smith Board of Directors, to a joint meeting of the Fort Smith Board of Directors and Sebastian County Quorum Court on Thursday night. It'll be a 14-month project. The resort management company that's managing it for the city and the county, remember, this is a joint effort. They say they've got about $250,000 in reserve funds, so it'd be about a $1.25 million project. It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is from these two governmental bodies. I mean, the Sebastian County Quorum Court has its own budget issue. As your listeners know, we've talked plenty about the Fort Smith budget issues. I mean, they can't afford, for example, they've struggled to be able to keep up with, for example, fire and pension funds. So this kind of request for a water park is going to be it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. A little bit of history, Kyle. I don't know if your listeners remember before they built the water park when they were discussing, you know, how much they were going to. Well, the voters already voted for an $8 million package, so keep that number in mind. And they brought a consultant, and the city brought a consultant in, and we learned later that they told the consultant some things he shouldn't or could and couldn't tell the board. Two of the things he wasn't supposed to tell the board, and he didn't tell the groups, was it would probably cost much more than $8 million, and that it would become a money pit because every 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you'd need to add some things to keep it attractive, to keep it viable because competition would come in and that type of thing. Well, this consultant never told them that, but sure enough, the project ended up being just short of $12 million. And now here you go, after 3 years, they're asking for, you know, another $1.5 million. It's not likely to set well with members of the board, and I doubt most of the general public will find this to be something they can support.
Well, when would we expect a decision up or down on this request?
Well, I would think that they want to move quickly. You know, there's a timing issue. It'd be a 14-month project. They would want to do most of the work, you know, obviously not in that 90-day period or so that they're open during the summer. So the board they'll have to move soon.
One of the proposed new slides would be called Boomerango.
Boomerango?
Yeah, that's neither here nor there, but
it'll cost money, and so the money won't come back either. Throw it out there, it's not going to come back.
Oh, whether they build slides or not at Parrot Island, building activity in the Fort Smith Metro, which was kind of going well, is slowing down now in autumn.
Yeah, it's hit a wall. And so for the first 9 months, the region, we look at Fort Smith, Van Buren, and Greenwood as for the region. So through September, at $152 million, almost $153 million. It's up against $166 million for the same period in 2016. That's down a little over 8%. Now, in August, they had a year-to-date gain of just under 3%. So the trend has now pushed the entire region into the red for the year-to-date numbers. The September total permits in September were down over 66%. It was 9 million in September compared to almost 27 million in September of 2016. And obviously the biggest part of that is declines in Fort Smith. Fort Smith numbers make up well over 85-90% of the total. So far the city's got 126 million in permits. Through the first 9 months, that's down almost 14% compared to last year of 146 million at the same time. So we're just going to keep watching. Hopefully, and most of this, Kyle, is commercial construction that's really slowed down. So it's just a general trend. And, you know, building permits are often a leading indicator of where an economy is going. So that I'm sure city officials and chamber officials and everyone else is hoping this trend begins to reverse itself.
Well, we'll watch the last quarter of the year. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about these stories and many others that are covered there around the clock at talkbusiness.net. Michael, thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
The debate about gun control in America has returned after the shootings in Las Vegas. Look at the political power of the NRA. We'll check in on recovery efforts in Puerto Rico. A look back at racial tensions that sparked outrage at a South Carolina high school in 2015, and the music of Carla Bruni. All that and the latest news Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Saturday, tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3. A new arts venue that's going to go into the old Crafts food plant near downtown Bentonville won't open until 2020. But The Momentary, as it's been dubbed, does have a director now, Levin Bertels. He officially moved to Bentonville exactly a week ago and spoke with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek earlier this week about his experience in the art world and about how The Momentary will be part of the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Can you tell us a little bit about your past experience? A lot of it is international. And just how has that prepared you for The Momentary?
I hail from Belgium. I had a bit of an international career so far. Worked in Sydney, Australia, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in France. I studied in the UK, and I'm, of course, very excited to be here now to help work on The Momentary, the new project.
And did you ever think you'd end up in Arkansas?
I've never thought I would end up in any of the places I ended up in. That's one of the nice things about working in the arts. You know, if you embrace creativity, you also want to be open to, surprises. And one of those things that I find most surprising so far is that you find creativity in the most unlikely of places.
So you work with visual arts, with music, with performing arts. Where did you get experience in all those areas?
So I grew up in a family of visual artists and arts teachers and scholars, and I myself sided more towards music and performing arts. And so my bag of experience has been a good mixture of those two. And most notably, when I ran the Sydney Festival in Australia, we had a great platform there to present all kinds of art forms. And what isn't interesting in itself isn't necessarily these art forms, but where you can create touch points between art forms and also between artists and audiences, obviously.
And so what attracted you to this position? How did that all come about?
Well, one thing that is really exciting is to get in on a project very early on in those early stages. There's nothing that beats the smell of fresh concrete. And I've had the great opportunity of being involved in a building project, in an arts building project once before. And that was such a memorable thing for me that, you know, I had never thought. I always went away there thinking that will never happen again. I better sort of, you know, keep that as a fond memory. And then, you know, another opportunity comes by and you jump at it.
Talk to us about The Momentary. If no one's ever heard of it or this concept that it's, you know, what it will become, how would you kind of tell someone about it? How would you describe it to them?
So we think that The Momentary is going to be a space for adventurous art discovery. And it's not going to be about what you knew when you came in, but about the experience that you will have. And when we say art, we mean really high quality art, but presented in such a way that is accessible to all. Now, one of the things we're really excited about with The Momentary is that we will be able to do that, obviously, with a relationship to the existing Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. And that's quite unique. You see a lot of smaller art centers pop up, both in big urban communities and small rural communities. But for us to be able to do that with a sister organization such as Crystal Bridges Museum is, of course, very exciting.
And what's that relationship going to be like? Obviously, the Crystal Bridges has a lot of internationally renowned artists. Will this give kind of an opportunity for some of the local artists to kind of grow and show off their work?
Oh, absolutely. We really want to create a sense of place artistically with The Momentary here for Northwest Arkansas. And we want to build those bridges with The Momentary as the conduit reaching out to that community. We hope that it works both ways. We hope to bring audiences to an artist community, but we also hope that it can be a pedestal or a jumping board for some of those artists to grow in their careers. It's early days. I think what is important and really exciting is that we will be able to really create a sense of place and to be of this region. And that's one thing for me personally that I found very attractive to this proposition. You're not working within existing confinements or boundaries.
Right.
We can still, you know, find our own pathways and find our own connections and grow organically, which is really exciting.
How is that all going to tie together, the work and the display and the artists and the audience?
So The Momentary is going to be a display space and a workspace and much more. We also want to be a social space. We want to be a culinary space. We want to be an educational space, and all at once. What's very important for us is that we will be able to bounce off the permanent collection of the Crystal Bridges Museum. We don't necessarily want to build our own collection, but we will be able to work with the museum and, for instance, have loans from the museum, both to put them on display for the audience, but also to put them on loan for artists to be inspired by them or to work alongside existing work. and do that, you know, crossing boundaries of genres and art forms. So who knows, maybe a choreographer will want to work inspired by a painting, or, you know, a photographer wants to work around a sculpture. All those things should be possible. And what we think is very important for us is to always create a diversity of access points for people, so that people can come in and feel comfortable exploring things they didn't know before. The focus is going to be mainly on living artists, on so therefore for us residencies will be very important. And in these early stages, we're looking at plans to have residency spaces in the Momentary, so artists can be invited for any length of time to come and work there and feel inspired by this region.
What is art right now for us? I mean, it comes in so many forms. Can you even talk about, I mean, the scope of art in our lives now? Can you talk to me about that?
Have we got a day?
I know, right?
Well, listen, art increasingly is touching all of our lives. Sometimes we're unaware. Sometimes, you know, it's very obvious. But what is great about where art is today is that it's becoming increasingly accessible to people, and that's very important. We, through technology and through media, have been exposed to so much art and creativity now that there is a much wider understanding of how it touches our lives. And but the things that art can do that, you know, are harder to achieve without art and creativity, such as, you know, forming community, creating a sense of place, creating a cultural identity, it often seems that that has become so much easier through devices, technology, smartphones, internet. But at the end of the day, what we find is that we all crave for actual, you know, physicality. We want to, you know, it doesn't matter how many streaming services are launched on internet, you still want to actually hear live music and have that as a social experience. It doesn't matter how many great search engines come up with algorithms to visit museums virtually, you still want to actually face the artwork and, if possible, meet the artist. And that last part, meeting the artist, is sort of what we want to, whether it's physical or whether at least we can give a sense of who the artist is, that will depend, of course, but we with the Momentary will very much hope to be that bridge between artists, their work, and large audiences.
And it sounds like the Momentary might be a way to create an even bigger art culture here, because Crystal Bridge is obviously wonderful, but all the artwork is sort of brought in and collected in this one place, whereas here you'll be creating
Absolutely.
Artwork here.
Yes, and I think this is really where the art world is at this point in time. There is a growing awareness of the importance of rural art communities and rural art centers. I was very fortunate to be working on a similar project in the Netherlands just before I moved to Mantonville. And there, too, we had the opportunity to be working with small rural communities and to draw in artists from all around the world. And it's just fascinating to see that you can have people that aren't necessarily traveling to the big urban places, to the big cities, the big museums, be very knowledgeable about what's out there, again, through technology. To be able to share that with visitors is, of course, a very important part of what we want to be. And second, of course, we also hope to create a reason for people to come and visit and spend even more time in Northwest Arkansas.
I think, you know, the experience of seeing living artists doing work, I think the ability to speak with them, I'm sure gives a deeper understanding of the work also.
Absolutely. And of course, already in museum contexts, you have a great opportunity to do some storytelling around the work, because we don't always have the privilege of, you know, presenting that opportunity. You know, the artist might not be available, might not be around anymore. But absolutely, if you can share that. And I think this is also where we take quite a humble stance. Even the name, you know, it's not about us. It's not about the center itself. It's about what it can achieve. And ultimately, we are only the conduit between an audience and an artist.
The Momentary is scheduled to open in 2020. So what are sort of the major things that you'll be working on in the next 2 years?
So it's a very logical timeline. We will be focusing on transforming this beautiful building. We're working on this existing building, the Kraft Food Plant here, just a couple of footsteps from downtown Bentonville, and turning that into our new art space, which involves working with Wheeler Kearns Architects in Chicago. We've done a proper survey of what the building can offer us, because we don't want to plonk something new. We want to absolutely work on adaptive reuse of these existing spaces.
Definitely.
And that's going to be the next phase, is, you know, fine-tuning our plans. What can we do? What do the spaces give us? What bits do we want to take away or add? And from there, we will start to craft a program and a team, build a team specifically for the Momentary. And we will probably also start engaging with an audience before we open. We will probably have some initiatives before we open in 2020. To give a taster of what the Momentary will look and feel like.
You know, without giving too much away, can you talk about the vision for the space? What is it going to look like when it's all done?
One of the nice things about the existing site is that it's very surprising. There's many nooks and crannies. There's lots of surprising corners in that building, and without giving too much away, we absolutely want people to be surprised and amazed with some of that industrial feel in there. Of course, we want this to be a social space as well. It's no coincidence that next door there is the Culinary College and 8th Street Market, and so we definitely want to make sure that you can have a kind of 360-degree experience where food will be very important. Well, there will be a cool bar. There will be all kinds of opportunities to go beyond just, you know, looking at art exhibits, right, or visiting artist studios. We want to make sure that this is quite a wholesome sort of experience.
So what are you going to do to kind of get to know the region a little bit, so you know kind of what the people are like and what they're into and what matters to us here?
I don't know it yet, but I'm very excited. I've only just moved here.
That's right, on Friday.
I moved here on Friday, 4 days ago, and counting.
We'll give you a little bit more time.
But it's one of the most interesting and fascinating parts of, you know, and the big privilege of what I do is, you know, to take my backpack and camp somewhere else. And I really take pride in embracing a region and trying to understand as best as I can. You'll never be a local, and that, you know, has two sides. You might have a different view on what resonates, and sometimes a surprising one to many. But it's certainly a wonderful privilege to be able to go in completely blank and sort of soak it all up. And that's what I plan to do. So, you know, on my first day at the office, I started to have meetings with people in the creative industries from the region, and I will continue to do that for the foreseeable future. You'll see me at all the local concerts and art markets, and I'll, you know, slowly sort of grow my circle.
Definitely.
And explore, but that is absolutely one of the most thrilling parts of the job.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing you like camping. We have plenty of places to do that. So
there you go.
Thank you very much for stopping by and speaking with us.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Levin Bertels is the director of the new arts venue, The Momentary, scheduled to open in 2020 in downtown Bentonville. He talked with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek earlier this week, and that conversation took place in our satellite Ozarks at Large home, the Farrell Aaron Studio, in the Walmart Museum in downtown Bentonville.
American humorist, comedian, author, and radio contributor David Sedaris returns to Walton Arts Center on Tuesday, October 24th at 7 p.m. Sedaris will read selections from new and unpublished works with his signature deadpan prose. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets. Village on the Creeks in Rogers will host the 6th annual Art on the Creeks this Saturday, October 7th, from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. in the courtyard. This weekend's event will showcase over 80 local and neighboring area artists. Admission is free, with a portion of proceeds benefiting Lifestyles Incorporated. ArtOnTheCreeks.com or Facebook for more. 91.3 is supported by the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring accounting and taxes with information on accounting firms and office equipment dealers, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and information at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com.
And ahead on today's show, music for two different audiences tomorrow night. Members of Sona will perform a live movie soundtrack at the Walmart Amp in Rogers, and Crusade and the Big Hog Band will dip into the Great American Swing Songbook for dancers at the Fall Swing Fling in Fayetteville. Previews and some music ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
In school, we were studying the music of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messenger. You know, we're taking that and we're going off the deep end in a lot of different directions.
That's Dan White, saxophonist with the group Hunter Tones. I'm Robert Ginsburg. Join me this Friday and Saturday for Shades of Jazz as I feature an exclusive interview with Dan White, plus a healthy dose of music from Hunter Tones. Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF.
It is Friday, October 6th, 2017. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Happy October.
This could be a sure signs of fall list, or it could be one of my favorite topics, shopping.
And it's October shopping because?
Because there's all sorts of festivals. Some of them are all about shopping. Some of them have shopping as part of them.
Okay.
And there's a whole list.
So autumn shopping.
This weekend is the Junk Ranch.
In Prairie Grove?
In Prairie Grove. Okay. And if you've never been to the Junk Ranch, well, hide the hints. How do I explain this? You have to be a junker. You might go to the Junk Ranch and you might find milk bottle caps turned into refrigerator magnets. And you might find repurposed furniture. And you might find unique handmade jewelry. 10 to 6 today, 9 to 5 tomorrow, and it's 1195 Center Point Church Road in Prairie Grove. You don't need to worry about that. If you go to Prairie Grove, you'll see the signs.
And this is not a permanent thing?
No, this happens two or three times a year.
Okay.
It's $10 to get in today, $5 to get in Saturday.
The logic behind that, some of the best stuff has been taken by Saturday?
I would think so.
Okay.
Probably some of the best stuff is taken by the vendors before y'all even get there.
All right.
All right. Also this weekend, Junk at the Mill, which happens on Mock Street in Prairie Grove. It's from 9 to 5 today through Sunday.
So junk is being repurposed here.
Yes.
Because junk used to have a negative connotation.
Yes. I think that all changed with American Pickers. I think that's when junk became cool.
And American Pickers is a television show.
And they're coming here. Did you know that?
I did not.
They are coming here in October to look for junk. This weekend is also the Arkansas Apple Festival in Lincoln.
Here we go.
Which has arts and crafts booths. And they usually have some really good ones on the square. Plus, you can get apples and caramel apples
and so this is
see
not
the parade. And
this is not a coincidence that you just go in 62 and you can kind of...
This is not a coincidence.
You make it a 62 weekend.
There's also a fall used book sale this weekend at the Bentonville Public Library.
Now we're talking. And most of the stuff is a dollar each.
Yeah. There's a fall plant sale. Mm-hmm. If you're in Bentonville, you can go on to Bella Vista, to the Allen's Grocery Store parking lot, where the Bella Vista Garden Club is having a plant sale from 8 to 1 on Saturday.
All right.
Then you can go back through Rogers to Art on the Creeks.
Yes.
Which is this weekend, which has more than 80 artists, live music, beer, wine, food trucks. That's from 10 to 6 on Saturday.
And that's just free to get in, right?
Right.
And then, as you would say, what you spend afterwards is up to you.
Yes. And the Homegrown Festival is this weekend, 10 to 5 on Saturday in Siloam Springs.
With live music.
And other things, but also vendors. So there's all your shopping choices. The Glass Menagerie is wrapping up at University Theater in Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told it is an amazing production, one of Tennessee Williams' most iconic works.
Yes.
Yes, signature works. 7:30 today and tomorrow, too, on Sunday. Pygmalion is wrapping up at John Brown University in Siloam Springs, 7:30 today and one on Saturday.
George Bernard Shaw?
Yes, very okay. good. The King and I wraps up this weekend. It's the Lincoln Center Tour at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. 8 today, 2 and 8 tomorrow, 2 on Sunday. Yes. Jocelyn Murphy, who works with me, has a review in this week's Free Weekly that came out yesterday about the show.
I got to talk with the lead.
Did you get the King?
Yeah, and he's fantastic.
I got Anna, who was also fantastic. And then there's something completely different because I studied theater, and I cannot call this theater.
I know what you're talking about.
I cannot in good conscience call this theater.
And here's, I'll tell you why. Because a couple of times I was involved with this, and you cannot call anything that would, the old Groucho Marx, I would never be a member of a club. That would, you cannot call anything that would include me on stage theater.
Fair enough. It's called Gridiron.
Now, having said that, there are some wildly talented people that are part of it.
Yes, there are.
And not just because they're very good journalists,
but they're very funny.
Our dear colleague, Antoinette Grajeda, is part of this, and she can sing, and she has rhythm.
And she's pretty amazing. And Rusty Turner, who is
has a voice.
Our editor
yes.
at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, used to sing professionally. He has an amazing voice, and every year I'm reminded of how wonderful it is.
Emily Cates is the musical director of Gridiron. She's wildly talented.
Steve Voorhees is back as Dr. Redneck. The theme this year is fake laughs.
Right. So it's journalists poking fun at local, state, and national newsmakers and news. And it's a good time.
Rogers Mayor Greg Hines is the master of ceremonies. Let's see. We're going to talk about things like how medical marijuana might be implemented.
Okay, yes.
A peek at the new traffic patterns in Bella Vista. A sports call-in show.
I will be there Saturday night.
Okay. Doors open at 6:45 today and tomorrow. Showtime 7:30 at Arkansas Public Theater at the Victory in downtown Rogers. Tickets are $25. There will be a cash bar. And the more you drink, the funnier it gets.
All right. Becca Martin Brown is not part of Gridiron, but she is with me almost every Friday. Thanks, Becca.
This week in This American Life. One of our producers, Parker, grew up in Baltimore like I did. And she explained to me that she and other black kids of her generation were terrified going to this history museum called the Great Blacks and Wax. This week, Parker goes back.
I'm sorry, I just got distracted by them trying to shove the guy in the oven. Sorry.
What? What?
No, that's Underground Railroad. That's a fake oven.
Oh, okay.
What's suitable for children? Sunday morning, 10 o'clock on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Tomorrow night, the Walmart Amp in Rogers will host a movie and a concert at the same time. The movie is Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. It's the first film in that mega-successful franchise based on the books by J.K. Rowling. The film score, composed by John Williams, will be performed live, featuring members of the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, conducted by Shi Hung Young. He's done this type of concert before, with this movie and others, and he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio yesterday to tell us that there are some differences for an ensemble playing with an accompanying film.
We have the restriction of the digital clock in the film. However, as a musician, we try to work within that so it doesn't sound so mechanical. But it is we do have that constraint because digital clock is very unforgiving.
And it's not at all forgiving, right?
Yeah. And so for the project to work, I know the scores and the tempos. So we would try to make it, I have to both coexist, me controlling the orchestra and coexist with the film for us to track it and sync it at the same time.
Do you have to be completely in the moment, or do you also have to be thinking slightly ahead?
Usually slightly both. I have to be aware of what's coming, and there are certain places, there are cuts in the movie that has to be exactly right on. So those moments I have to be super more careful with.
How many times have you seen Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone now?
Maybe 2-3 times too many.
No. Well, the reason I ask is, you know, there's this chain of restaurants, Bubba Gump Shrimp.
Yeah.
Okay. I was in an airport in, I think, Bermuda.
Uh-huh.
And this little bitty Bubba Gump, and they play the movie nonstop.
Uh-huh.
It'll end and it starts again.
Yeah.
I'm at the bar and I asked the bartender, because I noticed he was saying the dialogue lines, along with it without realizing it. I said, how many times have you seen this? He says, I see it like seven times, or hears it seven times a day. And I would think at some point your relationship with the movie has to change.
Yeah.
It's a tool, or it's a...
I think the storylines of the movie, once you experience it, then you take it for your own. However, the music... the soundtrack that is to the movie always help tells the story. So for me to do these projects, even though I have done these scores over and over again, they still keep grabs my attention and excitement to be able to use that tool to tell the story. Now the storyline of the movie is more of a hindsight. I don't really think of it that much. I mean, sometimes I wish Harry would get to his task faster. But we often say when you see something too many times, you get a little jaded, you know, with it. That might happen, you know. I mean, I probably know every line in the movie, but the music, it still serves the purpose, and for me, that's what we fight for and to bring to the audience, that experience.
Have I read that you've done The Godfather?
Yes.
Now, what's that like?
That's also very interesting. I mean, it's such an iconic film,
right?
And it's
and score.
Yeah,
yeah.
The score. I mean, I wish there was a little more music, more to it. I mean, the score, as much as it's so recognizable and it's amazing, it's only about 50 minutes out of the 3 hours if you add it all together. Mm-hmm. But it's a very powerful 50 minutes of collaboration with Nino Rota and his scores. But different films and different scores and different generations, they serve different purposes. So sure. I think... these days, the storytelling is much more involved and more in details with these with the compositions these days.
Are you able to go to a theater, and assuming you have time to do this, and watch a film you've never seen before and listen to music and think, ooh, that would be fun to do live?
Or can I don't know if I would. I guess now every film, to me, there is a possibility to do it live.
Mm-hmm.
But... for me, I always still look for the music. You know, I'm still that person that sits by myself at the end of the movie in the movie theater until the credit finish, because I want to finish listening to the whole track.
Are there certain composers, like I think of Bernard Herrmann, who did all the Hitchcock stuff, and are there certain ones that might be easier to do live or not as welcoming?
It's hard to say these days. I mean, I think all because of the edits of the actual movies, the original composition many times gets changed. The original intent of the composer sometimes gets altered a little bit because of the editing process. So that aspect of it has to do with technology.
Right.
But overall, no, I think the music is still there.
A survey of your resume shows that you have worked with orchestras and ensembles in Asia, North America, South America, Europe, Africa. Have you done Africa?
Not Africa.
Or Antarctica?
No, not there yet.
But you would.
I
get
would
the
like
feeling.
To.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah.
If I had, silly question to end this, if I had the wherewithal, and I don't, for you to do any movie that you haven't done in any location that you haven't conducted or performed, what would it be?
I think I would like to work on Lord of the Rings in New Zealand.
Oh, what a great answer!
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think to be able to see the landscape in person and to experience that, I think it's amazing. I recently just collaborated, did a concert in Iceland. So to read about their saga, to their culture and the relationship and all that, and to really have, you know, have all those influence on Tolkien and all of that, for me, it's almost a new reality. So I would like to do that.
Shi Hung Yong will conduct members of SONA tomorrow night at the Walmart Amp in Rogers as the movie Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone is screened. Gates at the Amp will open tomorrow evening at 5:30. The film's scheduled to start at 7. Tickets begin at $20. You can learn more at waltonartcenter.org. Also Saturday night, another musical ensemble, the 8-piece Crusade and the Big Hog Band, will provide live music for dancing. The UA Swing Kids and Northwest Arkansas Dance Society will host the Fall Swing Fling tomorrow night in the Verizon Ballroom on the University of Arkansas campus. On Monday's show, we talked with one of the organizers, Hung Pham, about the dancing. Today, three of the musicians from the band, percussionist Anthony Ball, guitarist and singer Jeff Kearney, and pianist Reggie Smith, will play some music for us. When they were in the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this month, I asked them about playing swing, jazz, and standards, songs older than any of them. Anthony Ball says he's fallen in love with the music.
I always point towards this is American music. You know, like a lot of the stuff is so infused with so many other genres now, but this is American music at its purest. You know, and this was the popular music of their times. So, like I said, when you hear this music, you know, childhood memories pop up. You know, maybe if you're an older person, maybe you and your spouse, you know, a drive-in night or something pops up. You know, it brings back really, really good memories, and it's timeless music.
Did you hear it when you were a kid in your house, by any chance?
I really didn't. Just to be honest, I was a church kid, and my mom, she was a church singer, so. A gospel singer. So everything I knew was gospel music, you know. So a little blues. I had some blues people in my family. I'm from West Memphis, Arkansas, so it's the Delta. So that's what I was accustomed to. I didn't really meet jazz until probably like one of the band members, Reggie James. He kind of introduced me to jazz, and he was like, "Can you play jazz?" And I was like, "Yeah, I know how to swing, you know." And in the back of my head, I'm thinking high school, you know, when you're playing Earth, Wind, and Fire and Elvis and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it changed my life, man, and it changes the way you approach music, because it's a little bit more intimate, it's technical, you know, so it has that side to it. So it refines you as a musician, but it builds your ear.
Reggie, I want to bring you into this conversation. When were you introduced to jazz, or perhaps swing, or either?
For music, in our household, we grew up in the South, so we listened to pretty much everything that you can name. In Mississippi, you can hear everything from Creedence Clearwater, like you said Sam Cooke, and, you know, I mean, it was just everything was on the radio at that time. Stevie Wonder, I mean, if you name it now, the influences were definitely from most of those 70, late 60s, 70s artists, so... That was my introduction to music, and my parents listened to all types of music, and so just I've enjoyed it, and it's been great, been a good ride with music.
Jeff, I know that you have an affection for music that comes before any of us in this room.
He's old. That's what that means. Yeah. He's old.
Hey, man, they can't see all this gray on the radio.
But what is your... Because I've seen you play, and you seem to have a deep, I don't know, would I say connection? You seem to really appreciate and embrace music that's decades older than any of us.
Yeah, whenever I'm looking for something new to listen to, I always tend to go backwards in time, you know? And that's where I tend to, like, you know, I don't know, find the stuff that connects with me a lot, you know, a lot more than... The new music, not to say that there's anything wrong with that, but I don't know, just for myself, you know, even like old country music, I've recently started listening to like old, like 40s and 50s country, and you know, I don't know, I never thought I would like that just because I was closed-minded in a way when I was younger, like, this music doesn't define me as a person, I can't listen to that, but when you, you know, when you kind of stopped thinking about it like closed-mindedly like that, you know, I realized I was missing out on all this great music, and swing is, you know, obviously just some of the funnest music there is in the world. Like you were saying, you know, especially in a live situation with live musicians and live dancers, how the music affects people's dancing, and that goes both ways.
I was going to ask the three musicians, yeah, if you've got people out in front of you moving, have a good time.
Oh, man, it's, yeah, circular. Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, it's definitely,
I mean,
circular.
It's always flattering to a musician to see that you're connecting with people in, yeah, that regard, yeah, you know. And these people come to dance, you know, so they're all up on the dance floor getting down, so it's really rewarding.
All right, now there are three of you in here, but you're not the whole band, right?
No, no, no. Actually, it's an 8-piece band, but, you know, we do different configurations or whatever for smaller shows or bigger shows and stuff like that. Drew Packard will be with us on campus. Everybody knows
Drew
Packard.
Everybody knows Drew Packard.
It's the hardest working musician in town.
The
you
amazing
know?
Drew Packard.
So, like, and that goes back to, like, this band, man, I'm so fortunate to be able to play with so many great musicians. Like, you saw those guys just, like, practice a song in, like, 2 seconds, you know, just go over part. Like, Jeff was trying to get a part of it, and Reggie just came in. He was like, yeah, 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 right here. Boop, 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 boop. And I was like, okay, got it.
Right.
Yeah, I loved it because Reggie just looked over, nodded. I got it. Yeah. I was like, man, I'm jealous of that. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, let's hear what 3/8 of the band, this configuration sounds like. What would you like to play?
What you want to do, Jeff?
Let's start out with that Big Bill Brunzy tune. This is a Big Bill Brunzy tune. He's an Arkansas native, and this is called What Kind of Man Jesus Is.
Tell me what kind of man.
That's fantastic. That's great.
Thank you. Ready?
Yep.
Reggie Smith on the Mary Baker Rumsey Steinway piano, Jeff Kearney on the vocals, Anthony Ball percussion. They'll join the rest of the members of Crusade and the Big Hog Band tomorrow night for the Fall Swing Fling, featuring live music and swing dancing in the Verizon Ballroom in the Student Union on the University of Arkansas campus. It's on campus, but this event is open to the public. There will be an intermediate swing dance workshop from 4 to 6 and a beginner's lesson from 6 to 7, then the dance at 7. All ages and skill levels are welcome to attend.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support comes from Farmer's Table Cafe, located in South Fayetteville at 1079 South School Avenue. Farmer's Table, serving locally sourced breakfast, lunch, and dinner Tuesday through Sunday, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 5 to 9 p.m. The Daily Farmer's Plate, menus, and more at thefarmerstablecafe.com. The McMichael Lecture Series welcomes columnist and assistant professor of history, Molly Worthen, as she presents two programs this weekend at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville. A reception and lecture will be held on Saturday evening beginning at 6, and a 10 a.m. forum will be held on Sunday. stpaulsfay.org for more.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Gravette, Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Have a safe and pleasurable weekend.